Welcome to the Good Manners Map with me, Monique Chambers, where we take a journey around the world learning about social etiquette and traditions. Welcome to the Good Manners Map with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Mohab from Egypt. So, tell us a bit about Egypt.
Probably one of the most misunderstood countries on the planet. Everybody thinks it's just about the pyramids and what you see. I would say the majority of true Egyptian culture is still 90% below sand and hasn't been discovered yet.
Okay.
It's misconceived. It's a paradox of existence. And it's incredibly interesting to study or visit.
So what should we look for then while we're there, if we're visiting?
That which your eyes can't see. Dig.
Dig, literally.
Literally.
so what have you found the most fascinating thing of your own culture that you tell people about?
What we define as prehistory. Egypt predating 6,000 years ago, before the age of reading and writing, when the true ancient Egyptians used to communicate without speech and words.
Okay.
At that point in time, people had gifts which have been removed from current society and our existence of knowledge as we know it today. That is what real Egypt is about.
So tell us a bit more about that. Is it the pictorial? Is it?
No, it's pre-pictorial. It's humanity did not need to converse in order to understand one another.
Okay.
What we may today term as telepathy.
Okay.
That's how existence happened. Egypt predates to 65,000 years. And unfortunately, only the decline, what I call the decline of ancient Egyptian culture, the last 4,500 is what we find fascinating. And that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Okay. So this telepathy, for want of a better word, is it documented anywhere? Is it?
It's no, just something that's why it's prehistoric. It's okay. Pre-documentation.
So, and are there people studying it today that...
It's not studied. It's... You wake up knowing it. We are born knowing everything that we need to know. We just become conscious of it as time progresses.
Okay.
There are those who are aware of it, and there are those who never discover it in this lifetime. So,
it's fascinating. It's just mind-blowing, actually, what you're saying there. So children would have the
children,
gift.
Children, animals, and one second before you die, you get to know everything there is to know.
Ah, and that's the essence of the Egyptian people, you think?
That's the essence of humanity.
And this is where it all starts. So tell us a bit more about, so when a child is born, for example, are there ceremonies and things that happen in the culture?
The Maltese Uchiha comes from ancient Egyptian culture.
Okay.
So that's very traditional. Boys are circumcised in the Middle East, including Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
I hope girls don't do that anymore because that would be horrendous. But some people still practice it in Egypt and in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But no, the upbringing of a child is quite similar to even in Western cultures. What they say is the Egyptian child, I think, is one of the five brightest on the planet until they hit the educational system.
Right.
And it all goes downhill.
Because then they're put into a box, essentially.
They're influenced.
Okay. And so the chi aspect, does that actually come true? Do you know if you've got people in your family that when they're, it was done?
I picked up a spanner. God, I hope not.
Not yet.
No, not yet. Yeah.
But it's the same sort of
yes.
thing where you put down different items.
Absolutely.
And the child
yes.
calls towards something.
Yes, yes. There's the baptism for Egyptian Christians, the Copts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all the same. We don't have the confirmation and all these, the bishop's blessings, and I think it's called the Grisma or something like that. These things don't exist
in, okay.
because it's not a Catholic denomination church, it's a Coptic church, so it's slightly different than that.
And then what about... sort of rites of passage as the child enters into adulthood. There's no
bar mitzvah style. Uh-huh. Don't exist.
Like that,
no,
okay.
No. I think Middle Eastern children, and especially in Egypt, they grow up very quickly due to circumstances, especially if you come from a non-privileged upbringing,
mm-hmm.
financially speaking. I started working when I was 13 years old, so
okay.
I needed to do it in order to survive. Simple
so
as that.
You just
yeah,
get
you grow
on with
up.
It, crack on, resilience,
exactly.
Get on.
Has to be done.
And then the next phase in life would be marriage, potentially?
If you're stupid enough.
now. But what are Egyptian weddings like?
Bombastic. Ridiculous. absurd. I would say second to Indian, you know. Belly dancer is a signature, definitely.
Okay.
But I think it's juxtaposed, because what happens is you end up having to spend a lot of money when you don't have it. whether it's dowry or an engagement ring, which costs thousands of pounds, or it's ridiculous. It's just a bombastic culture, and it's portrayed very much in the weddings.
And so the weddings, are they then full of, obviously, the dancing, lots of colour, lots of food?
Gluttony, galore, yes.
And how long does the ceremony last for?
One night. I mean, it's just, but it goes till the wee hours of the morning.
Okay. So. The wee hours, I like that. Yeah. Cosmopolitan influence on your language.
Very
there.
Much,
So the bride, would she wear white?
If she's entitled to, yeah.
Okay.
I hope so. Yes, but it is very traditional. They become more, I mean, you have the countryside Egypt where it's much more traditional, where you have the traditional Egyptian dress, etc. And now it's been influenced. There's alcohol, which is not supposed to be allowed in Muslim cultures, and drugs.
Okay.
So if you're a VIP, they give you hash.
Okay.
And then if you go to the hotels, I think they do it, but more surreptitiously so. But yeah, like Egypt has everything, absolutely everything. So you see, the span of cultural influence is amazing.
But are there things that they're really dearly hanging on to?
Belly dancer.
Belly dancing is the thing.
It's a must.
And is there a specific age that girls would go into belly dancing? Is it something they start very young, or is
it's
actually
very much
as you
frowned
get
older?
Upon?
Okay. Oh yeah, you're considered to be a tramp if you're a belly dancer. So, yeah, it's not seen as the art form that it is in the West. So there are very few who do it. And actually, I went to school with one of the most popular ones in Egypt at the moment. Mm-hmm. And she's doing very, very well. But she has a ballet upbringing, so she can do splits and she can do everything. So she's quite good. But yeah, it's very much frowned upon. So
that's a shame, actually. Because like you say, we have such an exotic...
Yes. But the interpretation that the West sees is very different from what is the reality in that part of the world.
Okay. So the dancers would come out after the... ceremony, there would be one belly dancer, or do you have troops of
depends
belly
how much
dancers?
Money you have.
Ah, I see. Okay.
But generally, I mean, a belly dancer is very expensive. If you get one of the top names, you're spending thousands of euros. So.
Wow.
Yeah, it's no joke. Okay. So yeah, she would be the central act, the attraction of the evening. So. Nope, and she would only do 20-30 minutes tops because she's so busy. She's they're millionaires, these belly dancers.
Move on to that. So not a profession really to be frowned upon.
Not financially, no. No, but culturally, yes, unfortunately.
Such a shame.
It is a shame. I agree.
So, and do you have belly dancers at other functions throughout your life?
Not that I can think of, to be honest.
It wouldn't be just, you know, we're having a party at home, let's have a dancer.
No, although at a funeral, it would really stir quite a bit of us. That'd be interesting. I'll think about that.
But so weddings are all very colourful, bright, everyone dresses up to the nines, I'm
imagining. Yeah, keeping up with the Joneses. Yeah.
And then conversely at funerals, how are they without
loud.
Belly dancers?
Loud,
really?
Yeah. Wailing women. We have an ancient tradition of the 40 days of post-mortem, where there's a wake which is held after 40 days.
Okay.
Without the cadaver being present, obviously. But that comes from the ancient Egyptian ritual of embalming, where the nature and salts used to work for 40 days in order to dry out the body.
I see. Okay.
So that's where it comes from. A lot of the modern traditions there come from ancient Egypt, but people are simply not aware of that.
So it's the person passes away, and then there's the 40 days.
Yes, of mourning.
And then
they have some kind of ritual, whether it's at a church, at a mosque, or at the house, or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And that's to commemorate that they've passed away 40
days
ago. But
they've been buried by this point.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So you're not holding on.
No.
So the burial, cremation, whatever happens.
No cremations. No, it's against
either.
Islamic culture. And it's really frowned upon. It doesn't happen in the Middle East at all.
At all, okay. No. So the burial then happens pretty soon afterwards. Okay. And there's a ceremony then?
Religious ceremony, and that's it.
But the celebration of life is the 40 days after. Is that something people turn up in black because they're still mourning? Or
yes,
it's still
always black.
Uh-huh. And the close family of the deceased?
They wear black for the whole 40 days.
And beyond, or once the 40 days is passed?
Depends how much they meant it. Yeah, exactly, I suppose. It doesn't make much sense. But,
quite mean, actually, because I think it's quite mean. And then if you just like wearing black, or people don't wear black in general,
if you're Dior, you're stuck with it.
Yes, they should do a whole line, shouldn't they? But is there particular foods, because you're saying about this sort of gluttony almost at weddings, are there foods that would be typical at a wedding or typical at a big ceremony?
At rich people's wedding, it'd be a buffet of sorts, so. And then everybody else there would be everything getting killed that has life, sheep, lamb, cows, goats, you name it.
And is that sort of curried, grilled?
No, we don't, curries are Indian. I would say, I don't know, they would fry it, cook it. No, we're not huge on spice.
No. Okay.
No, but it tastes good.
Ah,
It's good.
I'm surprised, actually. I just thought Egypt would be really, really rich.
Spices came from India historically through to the Levant, then down to North Africa. We're not a spice culture. We grow some spices for our foods, definitely, but you're not going to find the curries you find in India, for example.
But nothing. What's a typical dish?
Stuffed grapevine leaves. Mallow soup, what they call mallow soup. It's fried chicken, duck. If it has life, it's going to get killed that night, for sure.
And is there lots of rice and lentils and peas?
The real foods are like bigilla is a bastardization of Egyptian food. Yeah. But that's cheap people's, it's cheap. Very high in protein, very, very healthy. Because most people can't afford ghee and stuff like that. So they would live off legumes and rices. And
that's the sort of, is that translated into being street food?
Yes, you can buy, food is available throughout the day and night in the street in Egypt all the time.
So not going to get hungry?
Definitely not.
What should we try?
Kosheri, which is a fantastic dish. It's rice, lentils, fried onion, and tomato sauce. Mm-hmm. I love it. Stuffed grapevine leaves are another classic.
What are they stuffed with?
Minced meat and rice, but that comes more from Lebanon, Syria, that kind of food. Original Egyptian food is probably molokhiya is the only one I can think of, really, and that's the Jew's mallow. It's a green vegetable leaf.
Yeah,
it's cooked into a soup form. Most people hate it. It's an acquired taste.
Is it bitter or something?
No, I don't know. It tastes like salt and pepper to me, but I like it. I mean, I grew up with it, so for me it's different.
That's something you dip your bread into?
Yes, or you mix it with rice and you just... Generally speaking, if you eat Egyptian food, you really can't get off the chair afterwards.
It's heavy.
It's copious, and there's lots of it, and it's just people eat, you know. So they're not light lunches like, you know, the Dutch do with a sandwich and a cup of soup or something. Uh-huh. That doesn't happen.
It's long.
It's a meal. Ah. It's a two-hour meal for sure.
So that sort of even during the working day, that's your normal.
I think today it's changing slowly.
Okay,
that's changing. But I mean, people still would have like kosheri for lunch or something like that. You know,
do you manage to cook Egyptian food here in Malta?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Is there any Egyptian restaurants or anything like that, or do you just cook yourself?
No, I cook at home.
No, because we've got a Ghanaian has sprung up in Hameroon apparently,
really?
And there's an Ethiopian in Gezira or
They have
in
really
Cedar.
Cool food, Ethiopians as well.
Apparently,
really interesting.
Very spicy.
Very spicy. It's a killer, that.
Yeah, we're going to go and try that one day, actually. So what about cakes and biscuits and desserts?
There is, during some feasts, they do something called kahk, which is... God, it's really heavy.
Mm-mm.
It's I think it's ghee mixed with flour, and there's like a sugar sprayed on top of it. I don't know how they bake it.
Is it the thing that looks a bit like a pretzel?
No, it's actually circular and small. It looks like a half moon.
Okay,
but it's intense.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think you can eat more than two of those things
before syruped or something. No,
those are more Levant. Desserts. But the kahk is very Egyptian, and it's it's done during the feasts, but it's really heavy, really heavy. Sugar is huge in desserts, and I think Egypt consumes more sugar than almost anywhere else on the planet.
They don't grow any, though. It's
funnily enough, there's a factory which is opening up within the next couple of months, which will practically see Egypt stop importing sugar.
Right.
Which isn't a good thing. Refined sugar is absolute garbage for your body, but it's...
Tastes good.
It tastes good.
You know, I'm sorry.
It's an addiction. It's an addiction.
Yeah, I'm happy with that one. So, you were saying about feasts. What sort of... feasts are there then?
Religious. They're mainly religious. And then there's one called Shem Nisim, which happens after Easter. And that is an ancient Egyptian feast of rebirth and growth. But again, it's not attributed to that because nobody knows its origin, but we do. And it's very, very interesting. They eat dried fish and onion. You have horrible breath afterwards. But it's, again, it's traditional. And it's just like a spring festival for the Chinese.
So like a new year, almost,
yes.
New Year coming.
Well, we commemorate the ancient Egyptian New Year in August, but that's not celebrated officially at all in Egypt anymore.
Okay.
Ancient Egyptian culture has died in Egypt, unfortunately.
And there's no sort of chance of it resurging? You know,
not with Arabs present. It's impossible.
No,
it's 90% Muslim and 10% Copt,
so it's
not realistic.
Okay, that's a shame.
It is, I agree.
That's a shame. Are there any other feasts? So you're saying about religious feasts. How often... do they happen? Is it a bit like in Malta, you have a different saint every weekend?
No, there are
weekend?
No saints in Islam.
No, as in the religious, are they as regular as our
yes,
saints?
Yes, they are. And they're huge. There's like, there's Ramadan, there's the feast post-Ramadan, of course. And then there's Easter for us, for Christians. Christmas. Yeah, we celebrate all of that, except our Christmas is on the 7th of January. It's the Eastern Orthodox Christmas.
Okay. Not the Western. So it's quite mixed in terms of how...
Muslim and Christian. There are no Jews in Egypt who still celebrate, unfortunately. Right. They're a very, very small community, but they're not publicly acknowledged, their feasts, which is... Yeah.
So the Christmas day, the 25th December, nothing happens?
No, we have Catholics in Egypt, Egyptian Catholics, Coptic Catholics as well. So, but they're a smaller community than the Orthodox.
Right, okay. And then you have, on the 7th of January, you have your meal, your gifts, your ceremonies, etc.
Yeah, identical to here.
Okay, just a couple of weeks later.
Yeah, kind of thing. Julian versus Gregorian calendar.
Uh-huh. And is there, you're saying about Easter as well, Easter the same?
It tends to shift.
Okay.
We've had the last couple of years, it was on the same day as the West, but generally speaking, it's a week or 10 days apart. I think it's usually a week apart.
Okay.
And it's, I think Easter is more of an important feast in Christianity than the birth, but yeah, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. And families, again, food central. Yeah, but we do have fasts which are not practiced in the West. Like, for example, the Easter fast is 55 days.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's a sunrise to sunset occasion with a vegan break of the fast. So even it's not like Ramadan in Islam where you just pig
free
out.
For all after.
No, it's completely vegan. It's quite tough.
And that's a sunrise to sunset, nothing.
No, nothing.
Okay, and this is pre-Easter.
Yes, but we have, I think, 280 days of fasting in the year. So there's pre-everything, the Virgin's Feast. There's Orthodoxy is really Orthodox. So
wow.
If you practice it, it's designed to be ascetic in nature.
Uh-huh.
So the destruction of the body for the elevation of the spirit and the inversely proportional relationship between one and the other.
Wow.
But that's a whole other kettle of fish.
So this 55 days is the toughest, the longest.
It's the longest in the calendar, yes. Okay.
And then the others are all the same. The feast
15,
is...
1543, Jonah,
Wow. Yeah. Another, a 40-day feast as well?
Yeah.
Fast, should I say?
Yeah, fast, yeah. And then there's a 25-day before Christmas, I think, or something like that.
So this purely to prepare yourself, and then you undo the damage again, essentially, so spiritually and physically, because it sounds like with that many days, there's not going to be many days where you're...
Where I grew up, people used to fast year-round.
Ah.
Just, it became a lifestyle.
Wow.
It's nice.
Yeah?
Yes, very much.
I'm not sure I could... I think if you're told you can't eat...
But that's overcoming the mental desire, isn't it?
Yeah, and the habit.
Yeah, and we're addicted to garbage in the West. We eat junk.
I know. So. I've got popcorn next to me, actually, at any one time. So, but you think about then a vegan diet. How that's just for that, after the 55th day, for example, then what happens?
Then you break your fast, but your body almost rejects that kind of food.
Okay.
Because breaking down animal protein becomes very, very difficult. And you don't really go into a state of ketosis because you're still very carbohydrate laden, but you change internally very much on a spiritual level. It's
it feels good?
Amazing.
And do you still practice that?
Sometimes I do. Uh-huh. Not as often as I would like to, unfortunately.
Uh-huh. Is it more difficult in a Western culture now because of...
Work, just work.
Just work.
It's the I don't cook for myself every day, so it's impossible to do.
Uh-huh. But here, obviously, your normal office hours... You can't
more.
Practice everything.
No. You need to be, to practice this properly. I grew up in a monastery in the desert, so that's the ideal environment for it.
That's quite interesting.
Yeah, very.
So tell us a bit about that. Tell us a bit about a day, a typical day.
A typical day. We used to, on a weekday, get up at 4 in the morning. There was the vigil from 4 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
We would meet for one meal at about 6:30 in the morning. And then everybody had to work because everybody who was a monk, I wasn't a monk, I just lived there, had a university degree. So everybody was either an engineer, a doctor, or they were doing something. The, the monastery was incredibly productive, especially agriculturally. So we'd spend the day working and then come sunset, we'd have a common meal as well with the abbot. And then everybody would just go on their own, either walk in the desert or their own devotions or whatever. And then you meet again at 4 o'clock in the morning the next day.
You'd start again.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And that's... was how long ago?
I was 7 years old and I stopped going at the age of about 16.
Wow. Okay, so through childhood, not as an adult.
Yes. So. There was no electricity for the first few years, so after sunset it was all candlelit. Very interesting.
Yes. And has that formed you today?
Naturally.
So what do you think, what difference has it made on you versus your peers who probably didn't have the same experience?
I don't get bored, I don't get lonely.
Okay.
Simple as that. Everything is interesting to me. Uh-huh. Even an ant walking across the wall, I find that fascinating. So you become much more introspective.
And that's probably something that the world needs right now, instead of Facebook, in fact.
Instead of a lot of things.
But, you know, lots of bored, lots of lonely people. It would be...
Yes, yes. We're a culture of instant gratification, and that's what's going to bring it down and destroy it.
Oh, no. Let's talk about something nice.
Sure.
Tell me something really fun that happens in Egypt that if we're visiting as tourists, we should go off and try or see or eat or do.
Start in the south.
Okay.
Work your way to Cairo. Work your way up the Nile. The Nile flows northwards.
Mm-hmm.
So start in Aswan and Luxor. That's where real Egypt was.
Okay.
And what you will see there will blow your mind. Just look at every single stone and the color on it and how it was constructed and realize that these people were the epitome of engineers, doctors, physicians, physicists. They were incredible across the board. And that's why we call them seven wonders, because we can't figure them out. Mm. But... we know how the pyramids were built, and everything there makes sense. And we were healing people with the power of sound instead of modern medicines. Incredibly fascinating.
And so, start in the south. How long would one take if time was an absolute luxury?
To see Egypt?
Yes.
3 to 4 weeks.
Oh, okay. Okay, so manageable.
Yes, but you would be getting like what the Italians call an assaggio, a taste of everything. You wouldn't really be going in depth.
But at least you have a taste, and then you can
from Aswan going all the way to the Red Sea to the Mediterranean. There's so much to see. There's snow. You can go to Mount Sinai, and it's snow capped
all through the year.
No, I don't think so. I think in the winter months. And there's a very interesting monastery in the Red Sea as well. It's St. Catherine's. So there's a lot to see.
What's good about St. Catherine's?
Historically, Moses tablets. You know, that whole nine yards there. But I don't think it's the most interesting monastery in the country, but it's
significant.
Yeah, it's significant historically.
What should foreigner avoid doing in Egypt? To
drinking water
offense?
From the tap.
Okay.
Don't do that. Very bad idea. Don't swim in the Nile.
No.
Very bad idea.
Really? Okay. Yeah, yeah. And what about things that would be culturally offensive that we might do?
It's a culture of repression. Arab culture in general is a culture of repression, unfortunately. Ancient Egypt wasn't, but Arab culture is. And this is something that everybody has to know, that Egypt today is not real Egypt. It's Arab Egypt. And that's a huge difference.
So you're not seeing...
You're not seeing anything of the majesty of the country that existed, you know, thousands of years ago. Mm. Women don't expose your shoulders, don't wear halter tops, stuff like that. It's a culture of repression. Everything that revolves around repression, avoid.
Mm.
It's pathetic, but unfortunately, that's the way
that's
it is.
That's how it's gone. Yeah. And are there things, if you were to invite us to eat, for example, at a home, what happens? What's the timing in terms of, you know, if you say we sit down at 7, what time
for
would you
supper,
expect us?
Everyone's late because traffic is horrendous.
Okay.
So an 8 o'clock would probably start around 8:45, 9.
Okay. But it's always traffic related.
Yes,
it's not just...
You can't do more than 2 meetings in Cairo in a day. It's just impossible. It will run into the evening and it will be boisterous, and, you know, China will be out and alcohol will be out if you drink, etc. Uh-huh. And yeah, it's over the top. Everything is... Simplicity is offensive.
Right.
So because you're my guest, I have to really show off.
Fantastic.
Yeah, for the guest, it's brilliant. Yeah.
And what would a guest take as a gift?
Flowers, generally.
Yeah, and is there any significance in flowers or numbers of flowers or anything like that? It's just in general
Again, boisterous. The bigger the better.
The bigger the better. You're not going to take a flower and offend someone because these are the flowers you'd use at a funeral or something.
No. There's no culture like that in Egypt for flowers in that respect.
Okay, because I remember going to a friend's house when I first moved to Malta, buying her this pretty lantern as a present that I'd seen being made. And
was she Chinese?
No, but it was a little lantern with a Maltese cross, and apparently they're the lanterns that you hang on gravestones.
Oh.
So I didn't realise at all, and, you know, she was mortified, and I thought I'd done something really cute, so I just wondered what are the things not to do.
Yeah.
And there any food-related no-nos?
You know, Pork.
So just
but we eat pork. I mean, I'm a cop, so we love it. We just can't get it.
Ah. Okay. Yeah. But there's nothing like eating with this hand or that hand, or, you know, eating before or
after. It depends, because, I mean, some Muslim families, they won't eat with the left hand, for example.
Okay.
And, I mean, I don't know.
Work it out. So. Yeah. Because there are sometimes, you know, you don't have seconds, or you do have seconds, or you...
Yeah, but, you know, if you're going to get down to that, it's going to be, everything is going to be a no-no. How you sit, how you eat, and all that stuff. If you ask for food, then you're a pig. I think you just have to go with what you're comfortable with. And the world is becoming very cosmopolitan and very, what's the word I'm looking for? It's become like Shakespeare's theater, you know, that just one theater, one world. So
everybody understands ish.
Yeah. Ish. So the internet has taken care of that. So.
And have you been tempted perhaps to write a book about ancient Egyptian culture then?
No, the knowledge I have, I would pass to those I wish to pass it to. It's not for public consumption.
Okay. So it just sounds like it's really means something to you.
Yes, very much so. But I belong to a society of people in Egypt who we focus on that, and it's nothing will ever be written down about it, as the ancients did not write it down.
Okay, so just passing on to
mouth to ear.
That's a bit of a shame, I have to say, because I'm be quite intrigued to find out a bit more about the real Egypt.
It's a discipline. You have to prepare yourself for it. It's not something that you just pick up and share over drinks. Mm. You know, there's a process. Knowledge comes to you in many forms. It can come to you like an institution like this, where you sit down and pay for it. For me, this is not knowledge.
Okay.
Or it can be transferred to you. And there are many ways of transferring knowledge. And it's kind of like it meshes within your being. And that's true knowledge.
Okay.
So for me to pay someone to teach me physics is interesting, but I don't find it as knowledge.
Okay. But this and your own culture hopefully continues throughout your family line and throughout friends in Egypt.
Globalization, that's the word I was looking for. The bastardization of globalization is what is screwing up the purity of our cultures.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm sure it's going to die out or resurge into a huge emergence in the future. It depends which way the world blows up. But I don't know. I can't answer that.
I'm hoping that what happens is all of the things, you know, because before we wanted something everybody else had. So now we're all the same. We're becoming the same. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that we get to a stage where we want to be individual again. So we find our own roots and our own cultures again, and we celebrate those.
History is cyclical, isn't it? So
I just want it to happen in my lifetime. That's the problem. Because I'd like
you
to.
You and me both.
I'd like to appreciate some of it instead of you travel and you don't actually know where you are sometimes,
yeah,
because everything looks
everywhere.
The same. And
yeah,
I don't like that. I like this aspect of different weddings, different funerals, different parties, different rites of passage. I think it's really important for us to
agreed
not be dumbed down and all the same. Well, thank you very much, Mohab. You've been talking to us about Egypt here on this week's Good Manners Map. Thank you for joining us on our journey around the world on the Good Manners Map here on Campus FM with myself, Monique Chambers, and the technicians Carmelo and Samuel. You can hear this programme on Mondays at 1:30 p.m, Thursdays at 9:30 a.m, and again on Fridays at 8 p.m. You can also download as a webcast from multiuniversitybroadcasting.com.